is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Good morning and welcome to Medicine on Call. I'm Dr. George. Today we have a special guest and one of my favorite people, Ms. Twyla Brace. She's the founder and president of Citizens Council for Health Freedom. Welcome, Twyla, and let me start by asking you if you see health insurance today as smoke and mirrors. Can you hear me?
Yes, but I didn't hear the question.
Oh, it's all smoke and mirrors, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Well, if you're the one who has the government over the barrel because the government has decided that managed care is the way that they're going to ration health care so that they can continue to offer Medicare as though it were still available and fine and well and financially solvent, even though it has a $43 trillion unfunded liability. If you're going to make those kind of political promises, and you're going to have your rationing at a distance because you're going to make sure that managed care is all there is available. They'll do all the rationing. You, the Congress, won't. You'll just make sure everyone is in their system, right? If you put yourself in that vulnerable spot, which Congress is now, you have no data for your government programs. You don't know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And they keep saying that they're losing money and they need more from you, which is, of course, always more from the taxpayers. But that's the position that Congress is in now. That's why I say it's the tail wagging the dog. The tail are the health plans who are going to make the decisions, tell Congress how much money they want, drop out if Congress doesn't play. Congress gets nervous because then their programs are going to collapse. Their political promises are, you know, maybe we'll go up in smoke and they don't want that, so they'll pay more money. But nobody knows really what's happening in the health plan. And that's a position of great power for the health plans, and they've been given it by Congress.
Well, you have to look at where follow the money and where the lobbyists and who's supporting their candidates, you know, their campaigns. And I think it's all about money, you know, and who's got the bigger pockets. And it's never been the doctor and the patient, so we're always the rear, pulling up the rear. We're just the means to the money-making end, in my opinion, at this point. Now, I read your blog, and what I didn't know that you really fleshed out brilliantly is how we got to this point with the managed care fiasco that started in 1982 and with the HMOs. Can you just go through that? Because that is such an important foundation of how we got. They just keep doing the same thing. It keeps coming back over and over again with a different name attached to it, but the same result. So, I mean, if you can, go over the how we got to managed care, HMOs, and then Medicare Advantage and all of their stuff, which none of it has actually worked, but this is like, to me, another version of it. The Obamacare Foundation is based on this.
So I think just for your listeners, they can find this blog at our website, which is cchfreedom.org, cchfreedom.org. And we always have the e-news commentary, my commentary from our weekly e-news that is posted there, right there on the homepage. So the history of managed care is interesting because I think a lot of people just look at managed care and this is the life that they've known. This is life health care in the United States as they've known it, but it didn't used to be that way. And so just as even before 1982, just for basic historic background that's really important, is when Congress put wage and price controls during the war on companies and said, you can't raise people's wages. Then businesses came to Congress and said, what else can we offer? And Congress said, how about health insurance? And then Congress said, oh, okay. And that was the beginning of corralling people into groups. And managed care is all about groups of people. So here they are corralled into groups to get their health insurance. Okay, and then in 1965, Medicare and Medicaid came in, and that was groups of individuals across the country, all grouped in government insurance. So now we've got employer insurance, we've got some individual insurance, and we've got new government insurance. And so then, in 1982, Congress, I'm sorry, not 1973, Congress decided that the way to deal with how much the prices were going up and how the senior citizens were using all this health care because they got it for free, the prices went up, the use went up, and President Nixon and Ted Kennedy got together, and the HMO Act of 1973 was passed. And the HMO Act gave $375 million for the development of managed care corporations, HMOs, around the country. And it also required every employer with 25 employees or more to offer an HMO. And part of that $375 million went to subsidize the cost or the premiums of those HMOs. So if you were in a company back then, you might have had an HMO option that didn't require you to pay anything towards the premium, and that's because taxpayers were paying towards that premium. And then in 1982, the Medicare got HMOs, and they were called, I think at that time it was called Medicare Plus C. There's a managed care version before that, but Medicare Plus C came in 1997. And Medicare Plus C was the HMO version of Medicare that most people are familiar with. The HMOs decided that Congress was not paying them enough money. And Congress decided not to pay them any more money, even though they were asking for it. And so many of the plans who were offering an HMO plus C plan, they started to drop the senior citizens whole hog, like, you know, 10,000 people here and 20,000 people there and even more. Mm-hmm. And Congress got alarmed, I would believe, and in 2003, they created Medicare Advantage to take the place of Medicare plus C. The Medicare Advantage is an HMO plan, which is what we have in Medicare today. And originally, and I'm not sure right now exactly what the increase is, but originally Medicare Advantage was paying the health plans 12 to 18% higher per recipient than in traditional Medicare. 12 to 18% higher. And the interesting thing about that is for those seniors who are thinking about where do they want to go for care, if you are someone who already has a healthcare condition, let's say emphysema or, you know, some kind of cardiac illness, and you find out that Medicare Advantage is an HMO which gives you a network and you have to stay in the network in order to take advantage of your plan and have your plan pay it, well, then you might not go into Medicare Plus C because you don't want to be limited to a network. Mm-hmm. So who went into Medicare Advantage? So who went into Medicare Advantage and who's probably going into Medicare Advantage today? The healthier seniors, the ones who don't yet have a chronic condition, the ones who feel like this is great. It's a lower cost than traditional Medicare. It's great. And I have no real needs, and so I don't really notice that they've limited my choices. But if I get really sick, now I might figure it out, but I'm going to have to wait or pay cash outside the network in order to get the care I need by the person that I need. But that's how, and then the one last thing is Obamacare itself. Obamacare mandated or got rid of all traditional health insurance. Indemnity policies are prohibited for anyone age 30 and older. And so that was the final, the final movement of making sure all of us have only managed care. We have somebody controlling our doctor from outside. We have somebody who has control over the financing and the delivery of health care. And that is what Ted Kennedy and Richard Nixon, actually, when I did my article called Blame Congress for HMOs, I went into the U.S. Library of Congress, and I looked up what was said on the floor of the House and the Senate during the HMO Act of 1973 hearings on the floor or debates on the floor. And that's what they were doing. They were talking about merging delivery and financing of healthcare together in this new thing called an HMO. And that is a terrible place for a patient to be, to know that the one whom they're paying for their coverage is also going to control their care. So, but that's where we are as a result of the whole movement to manage care in this country. That's how it's moved.
Wow. I don't think there's anything for me to add to that. You just put it, distilled it down to the foundation. And on that note, let's take a breath and digest this and take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare. But for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose, and with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
Obamacare is failing. We all know that, but you need to know why and what you can do to get us back on the right track. Visit us at ObamacareWatch.org. This is Grace Marie Turner of the Galen Institute. Join us at ObamacareWatch.org.
Do you have problems with sinus pain and pressure? Do other people smell things that you don't? Have you lost the joy in eating because food just doesn't taste like it used to? Is your nose always stuffy no matter what you do? Maybe you have sinus or nasal polyps. These are generally benign growths that occur from chronic sinus infection or allergies that are either undertreated or have not been treated at all. At Peachtree ENT Center, we specialize in minimally invasive balloon dilation sinus surgery and correction of a deviated nasal septum and turbinate reduction surgery that can be done in the office. We use the state-of-the-art equipment so that you can see the problem. You will be a partner in your care, and together we will decide the course of treatment. We believe in old-fashioned medicine, where we take the time to fix the problem, not just medicate the symptoms. You can rest assured that all options will be offered before surgery is recommended, because Peachtree ENT Center is where patient care counts.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. Today we're having a very important conversation with Ms. Twyla Brace, the co-founder of the Citizens Council for Health Freedom. And people should go to their website, cchfreedom.org, so they can learn more and really get a foundation from a historical perspective, legislative perspective. This is just the facts. It's not about one side or the other. It's about the truth. And that's what we really need at this point. No one can make a decision based on emotion at this point in time in our country, anywhere for that matter. And if you don't have the facts, you can't make an informed choice. And that's what this is about. I learned so much in that last segment. It just made my head spin. Now, let's talk a little bit about the Affordable Care Act, because the so-called doc fix, which got passed, I don't know, maybe about 6 months ago or so, talked about how we're moving into value-based medicine. And I think that's complete nonsense. It's all about control, in my opinion. And in the break, we were talking about HMO or capitation on steroids and the fact that the government is, the game is changing. It's no longer about the doctor and the patient and the money and the control being within that relationship. Tell us, when I say capitation or HMO and steroid, how do you interpret that for the listeners?
Well, I think a lot of listeners don't understand the word capitation, but in an HMO or managed care way of thinking, what it is, for instance, either the employer or the government pays the health plan, which is the term that that the HMOs would prefer you to say, because it sounds so much more innocuous. But they're all managed care. So they pay the managed care corporation a certain amount of money per member per month. That's what's considered capitation. And so no matter, it happens at the health plan level and it happens at the doctor level. So that if the health plans are going to be part of a government program, so let's just say Medicaid, whichever state it is, pays that health plan a certain amount of money per member per month, and then no matter how expensive that enrollee is for the health plan does not get any more money from the government. However, this has proved to be a highly profitable provision for the health plans, of whom they make most of their profit off of the government programs, because lots of government folks never go in to see the doctor, but they get covered anyway. The capitation also happens at the doctor and hospital level, where a doctor or hospital could agree with the health plan to be paid for a certain population. And so whether those patients in that population come to the doctor's office or come into the hospital, they are paid the same amount regardless, per member per month, or it could be a lump sum payment for the year. And that is paid to that hospital or paid to that doctor, out of which the hospital or the doctor has to divvy that payment up across the year to that entire population. Now, if a lot of people come in from that population, or if a lot, or even just a few people come in and they're very, 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 very sick, it's entirely possible that the doctor or the hospital uses up all that money and is now just eating the cost, because that's what can happen in capitation. So the interesting thing about Obamacare is where it wants to take the entire healthcare system, which is the short and sweet way of saying it is to eliminate insurance companies from being insurance companies. So Obamacare creates something called an Accountable Care Organization, or an ACO. The ACOs have been called HMOs on steroids. But the ACOs have nothing to do with a health insurance company. So the ACO is actually considered like an umbrella. Envision an umbrella. The hospital is holding up the umbrella and is the top part of the umbrella. And under it are a whole bunch of little practices, maybe different specialists, different primary care doctors. And all of them are part of this umbrella. That whole system is called the ACO, the Accountable Care Organization. It's just the hospital with the doctors. There's no insurance in there. And under Obamacare, what the plan is that the government is going to pay the insurance companies this lump sum payment. And the insurance companies are then going to transfer the lump sum payment to the umbrella, to the ACO. And this ACO is going to take that money into their organization for the entire year, and they are responsible for the entire population using that money. And the insurance company, what about them? Well, they no longer have a risk purpose. Their only purpose now becomes to transfer those dollars from the government to the health plan or to the ACO, to lop off their 15% that they're allowed to do under Obamacare, so only giving 85% of it to the ACO. Mm-hmm. Now the ACO, the doctors and the hospitals, that 15% that the health plans took, that was supposed to be for administration. So now does that mean that the ACO doesn't do any administration and does only patient care? No. That means there's even less money for actual patient care in the ACO than there was when it was under a health plan. Mm. And what's the other thing that the health plan is going to do, since they're not going to bear any risk for the care of the patients anymore? They're going to track all their enrollees. So they're going to be the data and the dollar trackers and transfers, and they are going to lose all risk of insurance. And the entire insurance risk, so that risk about somebody being expensive and that cost-bearing entity being there to pay the bills, mm-hmm. that risk is all going to be on the doctor and the hospital. In short, the doctor and the hospital who are going to receive these lump sum payments from the government through the health plan are now going to become the insurers. So the entity and the individuals, the doctors and the hospitals, on whom you trust as a patient to have your best interest in mind, to tell you what all your options are going to have a conflict of interest with you if you are an expensive patient, because they have received a lump sum of money to take care of an entire population, and they don't even know who that population is. They don't know which of that population is going to come through the door, and they don't know how expensive that population is going to be, any particular person in there, for the year. So they're going to have to restrain access to dollars in order to financially protect themselves as the hospital and the doctors. And that's where Obamacare is taking us, so that the insurers are no longer insurers. Your doctors and hospitals will become your insurers, and they will ration your care to protect their own financial viability.
Wow. So, I mean, this is just mind-boggling. So now I understand now where all the underpinning of medical education is changing, or has changed, where the power of the doctor leaving independent practice and becoming an employee of a hospital really does, and I've been saying it for years, really, the fiduciary responsibility is to the hospital, not to the patient anymore. Now I get the bigger pressure for the hospital administrators to do their maintenance of certification, make it as hard on the doctor as possible, so they're just so beat down, they can't fight the system. And everything is tracked from the doctor, what is it, the number that we have to write prescriptions, drawing a blank on that. But everybody becomes a number.
The national provider.
Thank you. So everybody becomes a number in this system. It's all population-based medicine, and the money has left the doctor and patient. That relationship is gone, and it's now the government controlling everything. So de facto, this is single payer, isn't it? Because the government is the puppet master that drives the whole system.
Yeah, it's saying, yes, so different people have different versions of what single payer means. Mm. It is sort of a quasi-single payer. So the government isn't giving it to, let's just say, the states, like in Canada, right? Mm-hmm. The government mm-hmm. gives the money to the provinces. Then the provinces give it to the doctors. So that's one iteration of a single payer. Here it would be sort of like the health plans, of which I remember 15 years ago when I read an article that said at the end of the day there'll only be like 5 to 7 health plans across the entire country. That's exactly what Hillary had planned with her regional alliances, and that's exactly where we are now with mm-hmm. Humana and Aetna and Anthem and Cigna and Blue Cross Blue Shield. We have just a few very big players. And so this is, the money is going to be given to them, and then as though they were the states, as though they were the provinces in Canada, right? And mm-hmm. then they distribute it to the doctors and hospitals. And so it's a different iteration. It looks like we have a private healthcare system. It looks like we have free markets. It looks like we have private insurance, but we have it's all a facade. That's where it's heading. We're not there. We're not totally there. They're having a problem with the ACOs, the Accountable Care Organizations.
Yeah.
None of those ACOs are making money, or almost none of them are making any money. They're not having any of the savings that President Obama thought that they would have. Mm-hmm. And so there's a bunch of them that are failing. So there are all sorts of things in Obamacare that are failing. And this is just wonderful news if you love freedom and if you love free markets. But to see the long range of where they're going is managed care for all, and your doctors and your hospitals rationing your care. To understand that even though things are failing around with Obamacare, there are still plans by the health plans, mm-hmm. right, to get more and more of the pie and to control more and more of what's happening and to be the power brokers. And between the government and the health plans colluding together, with Congress blessing it because they can't figure out how to get out of this political nightmare. Mm-hmm. That's where we're going. Managed care running everything and fleecing us, and rationing our care besides. That's the plan. So, but it's a wonderful thing to see all sorts of Obamacare failing. and to show how it's very difficult to have single payer in a country of $320 million, as opposed to Canada, which has $320 million people, as opposed to Canada, which has something like 35 million people. It's much easier to run single payer with so few people than it is with so much land mass and with so many people. It's very difficult, and that's good for us.
Oh, absolutely. On that note, let's take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about what you have as a solution. Now that we've, I hope everybody can understand the problem because it's out there, let's talk about how we work around this problem. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
This is Dr. George from Peachtree ENT Center. We've won patient care awards and have the highest patient recommendations because we believe in practicing medicine the old-fashioned way. Practicing good medicine is based in listening to the patient and making a care plan that is individual. The best medical care is given when there is a strong doctor-patient relationship built on mutual trust and respect. At Peachtree ENT Center, we believe in taking care of the whole patient because healing is more than writing a prescription. Whether you have problems hearing, have frequent throat or sinus infections, from the time you call our office and speak to a real person, you'll be treated as an individual and not as an ailment. During your visit, you will not be rushed, and all your questions will be answered. When possible, natural treatments will be recommended to fix the problem. If surgery is recommended, cost-effective, minimally invasive treatment for snoring, sleep apnea, or sinus problems will be offered, because Peachtree ENT Center is where patient care counts.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Obamacare is failing. We all know that, but you need to know why and what you can do to get us back on the right track. Visit us at ObamacareWatch.org. This is Grace Marie Turner of the Galen Institute. Join us at ObamacareWatch.org.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare, but for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare. Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose. And with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. I think this is probably one of the most important shows I've had ever, because this is about making a decision based on our future. It's crystal clear. We had to wait for all the stuff to roll out. I've been talking about it, writing about it since 2009, essentially. But now it's all come to pass, and you can see it. It's not theoretical anymore. And we know now what the problem is. And the problem, if you continue down the path that we're on, it's not going to get better. And at some point, when they lock this grid down and all the doctors are in the system and there's no more private doctors like they want, no more private facilities, just what you got with the ACOs, then they got us. So I think we painted a really good picture of what the problem is. But you have a solution. And you started something called the Wedge of Health Freedom. And I got this in my email and I joined immediately. I mean, I didn't even think about it. I just clicked on it and put my office in it because I see this as the future of how you fight this. I don't think this is a legislative answer. I'm not looking to Congress or anybody in power to help me. It has to be the grassroots, us, working together, you, your organization, doctors and patients, to make a change. So, first of all, what is the Wedge of Health Freedom and how did you come up with it?
Well, the Wedge of Health Freedom is two things. It's a space and it's a grassroots movement. So I'll explain that in just a moment. I was giving a speech to physicians, as a matter of fact, and the one thing that I said at the end of my speech was that you know, this is like 2 years ago, I said, you know, there is a space today where doctors and patients are freely interacting with each other. And we need to make sure that that wedge within the healthcare today never goes away. We have to have a space, a place, where patients and doctors can escape to when the health plan says no, when the government says no, a place of freedom where patients and doctors can escape to work together. And so over the last, after saying that and people picking up on that, we decided to actually create or to brand that space. That's what we're doing. We're branding the space because that free trade zone, that little space of freedom that we have today, it's a free trade zone. It's a zone of deregulation. We have it today. We're branding that with the name, the Wedge of Health Freedom, hopefully to capture the attention of the American public, because although this has been happening, where doctors and patients are freely working together, cash, check, charge, they don't use Medicare, they don't have insurance contracts, they don't have the electronic health record, or if they do, it's not hooked up outside, so they're not sharing patients' information, they're not having to do all the bureaucracy, they're not following all these regulations, they're not, they don't have the lawyers and the billers and the contract makers. They don't have all of these people to add to the cost of care. So mm-hmm. they're just working together, these patients and these doctors, and the doctors are fully concentrated on the patient because the patient is their sole focus. It's no longer the paperwork. It's not the government regulations. It's not the health plan quality measurement requirements. So we branded this space, this free trade zone, the Wedge, and to get people to actually realize it exists. And so if you look at, if you go to jointhewedge.com and you look at About, you will see a figure, a graphic that shows where we want to go. We want to, if you look at the healthcare as a full circle, we have it in blue as a blue circle, then we have a little dotted pie shape in there, and that's the invisible wedge, because for the most part, patients don't know that the wedge exists. They don't know that this opportunity to work directly with a doctor who really cares about them, who might do house calls, who will probably follow them in the hospital and make sure nobody in an ACO rations away their care, right?
Mm-hmm.
This most patients don't know about. So I said it's a space and a movement. So that's a space. And then the movement is, the Wedge of Health Freedom is a movement, a grassroots movement to do several things. To one, now we have branded this space, right?
Mm-hmm.
But now we may need to make it visible to the public. We need to grow it. We need to protect it so Hillary and everybody else cannot take it away from us. And then we need to make it as big as possible so it can never, ever, ever be taken away. And if you look at that graphic, on our About tab, what you'll see is that at the end, there's no longer a wedge. Instead of a blue circle of healthcare that we have today with this invisible little wedge in it, we have a yellow circle with no wedge at all. And that's because the yellow wedge has taken up the entire circle of healthcare. And every patient has a direct relationship with every doctor. That's really the only way that healthcare was ever meant to be, is that the doctor was working solely for the patient. The doctor didn't have contracts with insurers. The doctor didn't look to an insurance company to figure out how they could take care of their patient. They didn't look at regulations from the government to decide how they could take care of their patient. This is the way you buy everything else in your life, is from your plumber to your plane tickets to whatever. You don't go up to somebody else and say, you know, mother, may I? you just get it direct. And because you get it direct, you don't pay all the costs of mother, may I medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have the conflict of interest. And you don't have the ethical problems where the doctor is actually working for someone else instead of the patient. And so we look at the Wedge of Freedom as recognizing that there's this space. There's this wedge today in healthcare, which is really true freedom. True health care freedom is happening in there, true ethical practice. And we say within the wedge you will find care that is patient-friendly, pocketbook and price-friendly, and privacy-friendly. This is the way healthcare should be. This is the way we have to get it back. And our vision for the wedge is that there will not only be wedge practices all around the country. We already have them. They're up today.
Yep.
People can go to jointhewedge.com and find a practice. But there are many, many, many more practices to be added. This is just our first wave. But in the future, we envision wedge hospitals. Hospitals that are also free from government regulations, 132,000 pages and counting, mm-hmm. of government regulations, Medicare regulations, and 20,000 pages and more of Obamacare regulations and so many other regulations. Do I have time to tell a story?
Oh, yeah, please.
Okay, so I was talking, after we launched the wedge in Washington, D.C., 2 months ago, we went to visit the offices of members of Congress. And for the most part, we talked to congressional staffers. And really, they're the ones that they're the ones that really run the show over there anyway. So.
Yeah, yeah.
But this one staffer said that healthcare had changed completely since she had been in the hospital for a week. Completely. Her whole view of it had changed. And one of the things that she realized is that that she saw all of these nurses and doctors, but for the most part, they ignored her. They would come into her room. They might say hi, but they'd go straight to the computer. They'd put in things, and then they'd leave. She said she was, you know, it was just like they didn't ask her, how are you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's up today, right?
Mm-hmm.
They were all concentrated on the computer, and so I asked her, so you felt neglected? And she said, yeah. But the other thing that she found out was that her bill for that 7 days was $27,000. But it was paid in full by the health plan at $10,000. So basically a third.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, so now imagine a wedge hospital. A hospital that doesn't have to have all the people that are required to follow all of these mindless 132,000 pages of Medicare regulations and the 20,000 pages of Obamacare regulations. Could your bill have been $5,000? Could it have been something you could actually imagine paying as opposed to $27,000? After all, they only needed $10,000 because that's what they took, right? And so... And so we have to understand that the prices of today that people look at and go, whoa,
mm-hmm.
you know, I really need insurance if I'm going to deal with those costs. Those prices do not have to be the prices of tomorrow. And once we would get the regulators and the insurance companies out, those prices don't have to stay there. Now, we don't want to get rid of insurance. The wedge doesn't get rid of insurance. The wedge is all about the delivery of care and putting a direct patient doctor relationship back together again, because that's the affordable, ethical, patient-centered way to practice medicine. That's the only way it should be done. But there still needs to be insurance. So insurance is for the catastrophe. But if the insurance, if you have a direct relationship as well with your hospital,
mm-hmm.
you and your hospital are going to bring those prices down to a much more affordable level. And for some things, you might not even tap into your insurance because it's not worth it,
right.
because the price has gotten so low. So we envision three direct relationships as a result of the wedge being successful. The patient to the doctor, the patient to the hospital, and the enrollee or the patient to their insurance company. And that's how insurance used to be. The
yep.
insurance company used to pay you, the patient, and you paid the hospital, and you paid the doctor. And that's where we want to go back. And then when that happens, we won't have managed care anymore. And those who choose it will, I don't know why they would. Why would they want to have somebody telling their doctor how to practice and telling their hospital, right, or the ACO? Why would they want that? So we look at the wedge as the way back to freedom, no matter what happens with Medicare and Obamacare. We intend to just basically neutralize it. Even if it stays on the books,
mm-hmm.
we intend to build a system that's outside of it.
Well, I'm right with you, and I'm one of the practices that's on the wedge. So
yes, thank you very much.
It was my pleasure. So what about things like pharma, big pharma? Is there a relationship that you can see having a power, the leverage, to get them to stop their inflated costs to the patients in the system?
So one thing you see now, see, the only reason that the, oh, well, two things. One is I think the FDA, that whole process needs to change. There's no reason that all of that costs have to be put in before medications are provided.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that health plans should be responsible for perhaps what happens to patients if they haven't fully vetted their own medications and fully made all of the difficulties known. You know, once they go through the FDA process, for the most part, they are protected.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've spent all this money to be protected, and then they have these patents, and then they go on forever, and then sometimes they have agreements with generic companies that the generic company won't put out a generic version. So there's all of this. But we have seen now in the news with the EpiPen,
yeah,
what happens when people start to pay their own bills. So that's the problem with third-party payments. The prices of the medications can go higher than they should go, and then any individual would pay because somebody else is paying the bill. So, you know, much like college education, that has all gone up as soon as the government decided to start paying the bills for college and, you know, and have all these loans. Well, then the colleges felt free to add all sorts of rooms and activities and stuff that nobody else would pay for if they, you know, were doing it individually, and they don't feel like they are. And so all of this stuff can happen when you don't pay the bill. But with the EpiPens, now, for your listeners who don't have any idea what has happened, the price of the EpiPen, which is decades old, right? What
mm-hmm.
happens with anything else that's decades old? The price just goes down, 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 down,
right?
Because they want to sell the newest thing because it's old, because, you know, it's all old technology. And
mm-hmm.
But the price of the EpiPen has gone up 400% in the last 7 years, up to $600 for a twin pack. The CEO of the company got Congress to give block grants to any states that would require their schools to stock the EpiPen. And the EpiPen expires, the expiration date is after 1 year. So the schools would have to keep replacing these every year, and the parents would as well. And now with the higher deductibles under Obamacare, the parents are having to pay the full cost, the $600. And when they used to pay under $100
mm-hmm.
for one EpiPen, now they're having to pay $600 for a twin pack because they're only being sold in twin packs because the FDA recommended that. So as a result of this all becoming part of the news, the CEO says, well, you know, the problem is that people are having these high deductible policies now, you know, and, you know, we're trying to give them coupons to help. Well, none of that is the answer, and they found out it wasn't the answer because they came back a little bit later and said, you know what, we're going to offer the generic version of the EpiPen at $300 for a twin pack. See, and this is what happens when people pay their own bills.
Yep.
They will not let these companies get by with this. They will make either such a public stink about it, as is happening now, or they will simply refuse that care, or they'll ask their doctor, what can I do instead? Or how long can I wait before that happens? That's what will happen when people start paying their own bills.
And
they will make a difference, and they will push those prices down by hook or crook.
That's free market in action, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
I mean, they run this system by making it so complex. They tell you half-truths. You know, one thing, I'm not a fan of the Affordable Care Act at all. Anybody who knows me knows that. But maybe they could have done a couple of things if they had to do this thing. Why don't they put their prices online? Who's getting away with allowing them to make it up as they go?
Well.
That's another show, right?
That's the thing. You know, with the wedge of health freedom, the practices in the wedge, if you look at the eight principles in the wedge of health freedom, we have eight very simple principles, and you have no doubt looked at what those principles are.
Mm-hmm.
But one of those, the very top principle is transparent pricing. Transparent pricing. So either the prices are all made available on the website, or they're there looking at you when you walk in the door. Of that practice, that is so key, and that happens. As soon as the patient starts paying their own money, they ask.
Mm-hmm.
They ask, and no practice is going to continually try to come up in their brains with what the prices are. They're just going to make them available. And that's the same thing with the hospital. As soon as there's a direct relationship between the patient and the hospital, those hospitals are going to figure out exactly what those prices are. And when there's a direct relationship with the insurer, and the insurer has only a relationship with the patient, with the enrollee of their insurance company, they don't even talk to the hospital. They simply tell that enrollee, okay, you're having, your appendix out, this is what we pay for, you know, appendicitis, or this is what we pay for a cardiac stent, or mm-hmm. this is what we pay for this kind of cancer. Mm-hmm. And you know what? The hospital will suddenly decide that's the price. They'll look at all the different hospitals around, all the different insurance companies around, and they'll go, that's the price we charge.
Right.
We charge whatever the insurance companies are going to pay. And so their prices, and you'll know exactly. You'll go to your hospital and you'll say, you know, I want my, I want a hip replacement. How much is it going to be? And they'll say, it's going to be XYZ. And you'll go to your insurance company and say, I'm going to have a hip replacement. And the insurance company will say, well, this is how much we provide for it. And then you'll take that and you'll go back to the hospital and say, well, how about this? Will you take this? And the hospital will probably say yes. And if the hospital says no, then you'll negotiate what the additional price is. Or you'll find out that your insurance company is paying more than your hospital is charging. Well, they're going to pay you the check. Now you have more money for your recovery time, for your travel time, for your parking at the hospital, whatever it is. That's what happens in a free market. The prices are available, and everybody is doing whatever they can to get you, the patient, into their facility. See, under managed care, where they are paid a certain amount, whether you come or not,
they could care less.
You're no longer a customer.
Yeah.
You're a financial burden using up that money. We want to get back in the using that wedge of health freedom for you to be the valued customer that everybody wants, and for this all to happen at an affordable price where the hospitals still make money, the insurance companies still make money, but you're getting the best price possible for the best care possible and the maximum choices. So that's where the wedge of health freedom, that's where we want it to take us.
I love that. So, I mean, I did my part, I'm doing my part as being a physician who is on the database or the available doctors. How can we get this right? How do we get this out to change the conversation? Right now, it's all about healthcare is a right, and you owe me your services, and you need to give them to me for free. That's the conversation out there. How do we change that? Because what you just described was perfect. You're getting nothing. Someone is controlling you, like, from, at this point, almost cradle to grave, and you're only a cost center. It's not about your health care. It's about control. How do we get the people, progressives, conservatives, people who like Obamacare, et cetera, how do we get their minds to open to this? What do you recommend?
So I think the people who understand this the most are those who actually go to the doctor and actually use the hospital. The interesting thing about health care, as opposed to education or other things, or groceries, for instance, is that the majority of people go around their day, their life, their year, without ever going to a doctor's office or visiting a hospital. Because really, the majority of us are healthy. Mm. And this that's the other thing, this fear of being sick, really, or a catastrophe, you know, a coma or a car crash, it's really rare. That's why you could have true catastrophic insurance, and it could be truly affordable. That's what it used to be, because it's still really rare.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to get the patients. So as a grassroots campaign, and as our website, which has this map that has all of these practices on, we've got more than 100 practices on the map now, and they're all over the country. I think it's in 36 states, maybe, that have these practices listed. But we know there are so many more.
Mm-hmm.
We just have to find them and have their patients find them. So there's sort of a two-stage thing. We want to get as many wedge practices listed on here, because they're acting like a wedge practice now. They just aren't put on our map.
Mm-hmm.
Because we want patients to have a place to find them. And then we're going to drive patients to our map to go find this kind of service, this kind of doctor, this kind of relationship, this kind of confidentiality, you know, this kind of affordability. with somebody who really cares about you, will really be with you, and won't let the ACO ration your care away, right? So we're going to drive it that way. But the patients and the citizens of this country who learn about the wedge need to help us. That's why it's a grassroots movement. There are all sorts of doctors who want to be free. They don't want to be, you know, checking all those boxes. They don't want to be doing what the health plan tells them to do. They don't want to follow all these regulatory bureaucracy. They don't want just 7 minutes with a patient. But they're not sure that they can break free. They think that their patients will never find them or follow them. They think that if they were to break free and go to this kind of a practice, that they would be left without patients. But what we're going to show them with the map here is that we're going to drive patients to them. They can start believing it's really possible to break free, that patients will find them. They will be able to offer affordable prices that patients will like. Patients can use their, right now, they can use their out-of-network coverage. They can use their health sharing account to pay for their services.
Twyla, I'm sorry, yes. I have to cut you off because we're almost at, we're out of time. But whatever, please go to cchfreedom.org and you can look at everything that Twyla said and become a member, if you're a physician listening to the show, of jointhewedge.com. And as a patient, get your doctors involved. And, you know, Twyla, I'm sorry we had more time. I want you to come back if you can.
Oh, that's okay. They can also sign up to be updated just so that they know on that page, or they can get our weekly newsletter at our cchfreedom.org, which comes out every Wednesday. So,
on that note, thank you for listening to Medicine on Call and have a great week.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.